In the first part of the program, we welcome back Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's an auto mechanic, and he is with us on the program every season to give you the opportunity to call in and ask about car problems. And if you're having some difficulty, all you need to do is call in and tell us, give us the make and the model, and then the best description you can of the problem, and Rick will suggest where you might look for a solution. As I always say when we have doctors on the show, diagnosis over the phone is tough, and it's the same sort of thing with Rick. But I've seen him do this many times, and he's very good at this. So we will do our best to help you out. All you have to do is give us a call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's for local folks. We do also have, though, that toll-free line. And no matter where you're listening, if it would be a long-distance call, you may use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. Again, 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
For being here. We have somebody ready to go already, so we'll get right to them. This is Lafayette, and it's line four. Hello.
Hello. Does the water, distilled water, in a battery freeze in freezing weather?
Well, if you have a battery that was extremely low on acid, and you filled, in other words, below the plates, if you look in there, you'll see the, almost looks like you're looking at the edge of a piece of cardboard, and those plates in there, if the water gets below those plates, then if you just put water in there, chances are it may freeze or it may slush a little bit, but it's going to mix with the acid. So in reality, it should not freeze.
Unless the acid is low.
It has to be extremely low, and usually, if that's the case, the car is going to crank real slow in the morning when it gets cold.
And then I guess this is related to that. Can a battery blow up when you try to jump start through it?
Yeah, they blow up for one or two reasons. One, they blow up in freezing weather if the caps, the venting of the battery, becomes frozen. And then you put the jumper cables on there, and as soon as you put the jumper cables on there, it creates a chemical reaction within the battery where it generates a gas. And if the gas has nowhere to escape, then yes, it can explode.
Oh, the vents are blocked.
That's correct.
Okay.
The only other way it can happen is if you're charging a battery, and after the battery is charged, you disconnect one of the cables and create a spark, and if there's enough gas in that immediate area, it could potentially explode. But that's not very likely.
Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you. If you have a car that has to sit outside, if you don't have a garage, does that make a difference in the life of the battery?
Not really.
So that shouldn't...
I don't think it does
that
much.
Make
I mean,
difference.
Most batteries today are really designed very well. Typically, if you have a car that has a battery that's been in there 5 years, you probably should consider changing it. Hmm. Instead of waiting until it's 20 below and there's snow on the ground and all the tow trucks are busy. And
I suppose if you were concerned when you, if you're in the habit of in the fall taking your car and having it checked to make sure that it's okay for the winter, they can check the battery and tell you whether they think that it's okay or not.
Yes, and individuals could do that themselves as well. If you just simply disable the ignition system or the fuel system and then crank the car over, obviously it's not going to start, and if you monitor the voltage of the battery while cranking, if it drops down to 9.6 volts or less, the battery should definitely be replaced.
Okay. Somebody calling from a car phone. Gibson City. That's line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a 93 Nissan Maxima with 161,000 miles on it. It was parked outside Monday night in the driving rain. It was facing east, and it would not start. It had plenty of power, but I think it just got too wet. I don't know. The distributor cap, when he took it off the next day, it was fine. So I don't know what else could be wrong with it or where I could see if I could get it checked on.
Did you finally get it started?
The next day he towed it and was checking out, and it started without any work at all done on it.
Right. It probably needs a distributor cap and wires. And you can kind of duplicate that environment that the car was in the other night with just a Windex bottle full of water.
Okay.
And just start the car up and let it idle, and just start spraying the ignition cables down and the distributor cap down. And what you're going to see is you're going to see when the water gets in that area, it's going to create a conductor for the electricity to ground, and you're going to start to see sparks from the plug wires to ground.
Okay.
And then the engine eventually will die.
Okay.
But that's the simplest way to duplicate the environment it was in.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. We'll go next to a caller in Champaign, and this is line number two.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 94 Chevy Corsica, and I have something that happens only intermittently, usually within the first 5 minutes of the driving time. But the car will appear like it's just going to lose all power and die, and then it will surge. I took it in for a winter checkup. They suspected there was maybe the throttle body had sludge in it,
they
cleaned that out, but that wasn't the problem. Then I had someone else suggest it was the alternator, but my mechanic assures me it's not that. So I don't know what to do.
This is only when you come up to a stop sign?
Actually, usually not when I'm coming up to a stop, just when I'm driving.
Oh, okay, so you can actually feel it while you're at speed.
Right.
How old is the fuel filter?
I don't know.
When it starts to do this, meaning buck or surge, if you let up on the gas a little bit and then slightly accelerate, have you done that?
Yes.
Okay, what happens?
That's when it surges. If I step on the gas at all, that's when it just takes off.
Okay. So when it starts to surge, if you let up on the gas a little bit and then accelerate again, the problem goes away?
I'm not sure. I haven't tried that exactly.
Okay. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to narrow it down to either ignition problem or a fuel problem.
Okay.
And by letting up on the gas a little bit, you decrease the amount of air that goes into the engine, and what little fuel is in there, it becomes richer, and then when you accelerate, it accelerates fine, which would kind of go back to possibly a restricted fuel filter. Because when it's cold, it needs maximum pressure and volume.
Okay.
Does it idle okay when it warms up?
Yes, it seems to.
Okay. And there's no check engine light or service engine soon light coming on?
No, I haven't had any lights come on at all.
Okay.
And it's just very intermittent when it does it. I can go for a week or two and it's fine, and then like one morning it will just do this. So,
Is it when it does it? Is it real crisp, or is it kind of like delayed? I mean,
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, electrical problems with a car, meaning ignition system problems, are like a light switch.
Okay.
Either the light is on or the light is off, and it's very quick when it happens. A fuel-related problem is more sluggish.
I would say this is very sluggish.
Okay.
When it happens.
All right. Then I would have the fuel filter checked.
Okay.
And have them monitor the fuel pressure.
Okay.
Does it starts okay in the morning, or do you have to crank it a long time?
No, it starts great.
Okay.
It runs like a top other than this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that would probably be the first place to look.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I appreciate that.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
How often do you change a fuel filter?
On a fuel-injected car, every 15,000 miles. That's what we recommend. Manufacturers, everybody's got their own idea about when it should be changed, but I think every 15,000, it's not that expensive. It's good preventative maintenance to change that.
And the function is because there may be some stuff in the gasoline that you're trying to filter out and not get into the engine?
Yes, that and... As an electric pump runs, metal actually comes off the pump over time. And sometimes they'll get pretty restricted. And the typical scenario of a bad fuel filter, say you're going down the highway and you're going 65, and then all of a sudden you're going 60, and you keep pushing down on the gas pedal, and you keep going slower and slower and slower. And then finally you pull off to the side of the road, and you shut the thing off, you wait 5 or 10 minutes, you start it back up, and it takes off just fine, and you go down the road again for 10, 15 miles, and it does the same thing again. When you shut the key off, the fuel pressure drops, and the deposits that are on the fuel filter. It's kind of like if you had a fan running and you put a piece of paper on the back of the fan, it would stay there. Uh-huh. And as soon as you turn the switch off and the fan quits turning, then the paper falls to the ground. It's the same thing that happens in the fuel filter, and that's why you can go on again, and then kind of it just keeps doing it over and over again.
Okay. We're talking this morning with Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He is on the program here with us every season to take your questions about car problems, and if you're having a problem, call in and tell us about it. He'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Urbana, line one. Hello? I'm sorry, for some reason we can barely hear you.
Should I try calling back?
Why don't you try that? Maybe we'll just see if we can get a better connection the second time around. My apologies here. In the meantime, let's go to another caller. This will be on the campus, and it's line three.
Hi. Mm-hmm. We have a 93 Mercury Villager. It's got about 117,000 miles on it. And when we get to high speeds, the car shimmies. Vibrates. We've had the front end alignment checked, and we haven't rotated our tires as much as we should have. They've got about 35,000 miles on them. Do you have any idea what it could be?
Well, when you go real slow, like 10 mile an hour, and if you let go of the steering wheel or just lightly hold on to the steering wheel, does it move to the left and move to the right?
No, it doesn't. We had that checked out.
Okay. And when was the last time you had the tires balanced?
It's been a while.
Okay. That would be the first place to start. Does it happen above 50 mile an hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's also not the tie rod either. We did have a problem with that, and it was replaced.
Right. Yeah, a loose tie rod end or anything loose in the front end may create a vibration after a bump.
Uh-huh.
And it will also create excessive play in the steering wheel.
Okay.
Like the car, it'll be hard to drive straight because you're turning to the right, turning to the left. Uh-huh. Try to keep going straight. So I would suggest tire balance.
Okay. And it wouldn't be shocks or struts?
No. Okay. Shocks and struts simply keep the tire in contact with the road on bumps.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. Next caller is, let me see, I think Oakland, line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My son just recently bought a Chevrolet Beretta 87 model, and I decided to take it in because it needed a new muffler to this local repair person who installed a new muffler. And then I said, well, I'll also drain the transmission fluid while you're at it and get an oil change for it. And then in the interim of him doing this, he found that the fuel filter was so badly calcified, basically, that it probably needed a new one. He couldn't even get it off. It was really hard to get it off, and it was all rusted. So he put a new fuel filter in, and then it sat over at his place for a little while before I went to pick it up. And when I did, my son and I went down and took a long drive with it. And as we came back up to the highway, we sat there at the stop sign, and as I went in to try to go forward, it just went clunk and went dead. Then I started back up, put it in reverse, and it wouldn't go in reverse. It just died. Same in drive. Well, then if it sits there with the engine off for some small period of time, it finally would start up and it would drive. Then it wasn't causing any problems. Then later in the day, you get back in it, and it gave us a short drive up to the highway, and you sit at a stop sign, and the same thing happened. But when you leave the engine off for a long period of time, you can get back in it, and it'll start driving when there's no problem.
This is always after you get above, say, 42 mile an hour?
Well, in town, it was up to 35 miles an hour going up to the main highway there.
Okay.
But the other times, yes, it was up, exceeded speeds of 45 to 50 miles an hour.
Okay. Does the car have a position on the shifter where you can take it out of overdrive? Has it got two letter Ds, one with a square around it?
Yeah, it has a D1 and a D2. Okay. One and two down below the drive, right.
Okay. Next time, drive it in the shifter position that will prevent it from going into overdrive. And do the same trip, same exact trip that you took, that it died before on you, and probably will not die. And what's happening is the torque converter lockup solenoid, which puts the vehicle into overdrive, which couples the engine and the transmission one-to-one, locks up, and it keeps it in that position. And when you come up to a stoplight or a stop sign, since it's locked directly, it's like if you came up to a stoplight and left a manual transmission car in gear and just stepped on the brake pedal, mm-hmm. and the car died. It's the same exact thing.
Right. That's about right. So it's a torque converter.
Lockup solenoid.
Lockup
solenoid. It's inside the transmission pan.
Okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with the prior service other than, I imagine this car has probably got more than 90,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Is that there's two schools of thoughts on transmission services. If you've never done a transmission service before and you've got more than 90,000 or around 100,000 miles, some people say you should never service it because what happens is you disrupt the sediment that's in there and you what was kind of sitting in the bottom of the pan, you kind of stir things up and it plugs up passageways, which is possibly what happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what I'm trying to say is the fellow that serviced transmission didn't create the problem.
Right.
Okay.
But it was flushing probably the transmission out?
He probably just drained it.
Yeah.
And put a new filter on, a new gasket, and put
right.
it back together is probably all he did.
Right. So that might have disrupted, though, a little bit of that.
That's a possibility.
Thing.
Right.
Causing this problem. So, in other words, he should drive it in D1 or D2?
Yeah, just in a position so that it shifts properly, but it does not go into overdrive.
Okay.
You might look at your owner's manual. It should talk about that.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. We will just keep going. We'll go next to Urbana, back to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me better?
Yes, we hear you just fine.
I think the problem was at my end. We have a 92 Honda and had taken it in for its 90,000-mile prescribed service. And then shortly after that, I took it on a long trip by myself, and it died on me in the dark, in the night, on a rural highway. Turned out it was the distributor housing.
Igniter?
Pardon?
Igniter?
The igniter?
Yeah, they call it that.
No, they call it distributor housing, and rotors got changed. What happened was the car shuddered a little bit. I wasn't sure at first whether it was road or the car, and I lost power, and there was also some rattling underneath me. So it seemed like the exhaust system was...
Oh, okay. The bearings, that was the bearings in the distributor you heard.
Oh.
Okay. So they replaced the whole distributor housing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that something that is expected to happen at a particular time? Is that it's really bothersome to have that kind of thing happen when you're in a really inconvenient place and you think you've got the car all set for
right.
long trips. Is that something that we could have or the dealer should have looked at? Or
no, because it's one of those things that it's an audible type situation.
It's a what kind of situation?
Audible. You hear it.
Yeah.
The noise you heard
mm-hmm.
was the actual distributor bearings locking up. And
uh-huh.
it creates a real high shrilling noise. And sometimes you'll hear it at idle. And sometimes you get a warning and sometimes you don't.
Yeah, I didn't have any warning.
No, it's just one of those things. There's no way anybody can predict when something like that's going to happen.
Mm.
I've seen it a lot.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a problem with the distributor, the bearing problem, the manufacturer of the distributor, or the bearing problem. I've seen it on Acuras as well. Acura, of course, uses a Honda product as an engine. But it's just one of those things. I mean, it's unfortunate, obviously, that it happened to you in the situation it did.
Yeah, well, I'm just glad that I invested in a cell phone that I'll just use to carry it around for this sole purpose. And
right. yeah.
doesn't even have a battery that works anymore, but I could plug it into my my car.
Right. Well,
and so I got rescued. But
well, if it's okay. Of comfort to you, of all the new housings that we've installed after this failure, mm-hmm. we've never seen one go bad.
Okay.
So they're obviously making the bearings a little better.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. And to Winnebago, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today's problem is a 94 Dodge Ram 1500. And the very outside of the tread on the front wheels wears rapidly.
Smooth?
Well, it's getting there. Okay. I took off one tire and put another one on. The tire I took off had a little bit of cupping along the edge, and it only scrubbed off the outside row of tread. Inside, it was fine. And the left side is doing a similar thing. And it got so you could actually hear it as you're going down the road. It would sound almost like a wheel bearing.
Right. Yeah,
but
they
it wasn't.
Won't. Right.
Yeah, I had them repacked just as routine.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, make a short story long, I went to a place that does steering alignment, and I says, what can you do? What's wrong with it? And he says, well, it's either needs to be aligned or your steering is worn out. You have to replace it. Well, I knew that, but I would like to know, was it likely to be tie rods, or is it likely to be some other suspension component? By the way, there's no toe-in when it's at rest. It's just about zero toe-in.
Mm-hmm.
So, any ideas?
Well, as long as all the components are tight, which on a truck, when things get loose, you usually can feel that. They just kind of...
I would have guessed so.
You kind of wander all over. As far as tie rod ends are concerned, that's not going to create the problem you're experiencing.
Huh.
What tie rod ends that are loose are going to do is they're going to change toe. And by changing toe, you're going to get a feathered edge wear, kind of like if you looked at this hacksaw blade from the side.
Sure, yeah.
Now, as far as the wear you're experiencing, that's camber. It's too positive camber. The camber is too positive. It needs an alignment.
Okay. Apparently, nowadays, they actually do adjust the camber on these things then. Is that right?
Well, some of them have provisions for it, and those that do not, the suspension manufacturers make ball joints now that you can put in place of the factory ball joints that do allow for adjustment.
Okay.
Some of the older ones, you literally had to bend, like the old Ford twin
sure.
I-beam, you literally had to bend those beams.
Yeah, that's all I ever knew about.
Right.
And this is because of the modern independent suspensions they're using, I gather. Is that right?
Well, the trucks, obviously the front, you know, is always, for the most part, have been independent except for the I-beam configuration. What you might do is just call your local parts store and just tell them your application and ask them if they've got ball joints to provide for camber adjustment. And you might, I don't know, you sound like you know a lot about cars, so you might maybe even do a little research at the library and see if there are provisions for adjustment from the factory.
Yeah.
So at least that way when you make an appointment, you'll have a pretty good sense of what to describe to them.
Yes. I don't really want to get under it myself.
Right. But, so you can at least do a little research.
Yeah. I just couldn't consider that camber could be a problem.
Right.
With them. But they drive so much better than the old Diamond T's that I guess that's why they drive better, is they got independent suspension.
Yeah, they're a lot different. A lot of these trucks don't ride like trucks anymore.
No, this 90 miles an hour flying down a freeway.
Right.
So, well, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Appreciate that.
Thanks for the call. We're about midway through here. Our guest is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign, and we're talking about cars. He is here with us every season, so four times a year, and we just say, You got a problem? Call in and tell us about it, and he'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We've got lots of folks here who are in line, so we'll just take the next person, and that would be in St. Joe on line three. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Mm-hmm. Three questions. First is, I got in just tail end the discussion regarding fuel filters. Were you saying you're recommending changing them at 15,000-mile intervals?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Next question is, I've got an 85 Pontiac, and I got a problem with the steering. It's stiff when the weather gets cold. And I really don't want to spend a lot of time or a lot of expense in repairing this thing. And I just wondered if it's safe and it's okay if I just let it warm up before I put it in gear and get going.
Yes, you'll be fine.
Yeah, okay. And what is that? What causes that?
The spool valve in the rack, which is what distributes the pressure.
Uh-huh.
They use two dissimilar metals. I think it's aluminum and steel. And when it's cold, it sticks. Uh-huh. It won't move. And that it's kind of like the same thing as if you took the belt off the power steering pump is the way it feels. And then it kind of gets jerky in the movement, and then finally it like breaks loose. And
okay.
That's when those two dissimilar metals separate from one another, then it turns easily. But it's not a safety issue.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, it is if you try to drive it when it's cold.
Yeah.
But after it's freed up, it's fine.
Can you give me a recommendation how long I should let it idle before I put it in gear?
Oh, I would just usually what I do when I have one like that, and I just sit in there and kind of put a little bit of effort, like I'm trying to turn, while I just give it a little bit of gas and just kind of wait till my hand moves, and then take off.
I see. Good. And do a little testing. Okay, got
right.
It. And the last question is, the headliner's falling.
Right.
Do you do that kind of work there at your shop?
No, we don't. That's...
Do you have any recommendations where I could get that work done? It's kind of an unusual thing.
Yeah, it's kind of... Unless it's something you want to fuss with. I've seen a lot of people have their own way of fixing those things, but that can get kind of expensive because what it is the liner has a little separate strip that wraps around like a bow.
Yeah.
And it comes off that bow, and then it starts to hang down.
Yeah.
So...
And I got to hang it down
it kinda
all
gets,
over the place.
Yeah, it can kind of get in your way, too, if you're trying. Sometimes they fall down in front of you while you're driving.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a safety issue.
Yeah, right.
But the best thing to do is get on the phone, because I think you might be kind of surprised at what it's going to cost.
Yeah.
And then you might want to...
I'd rather not put a lot of money in this old car, but I didn't know whether it could be, you know, just the spots. But I've heard that you just have to replace the whole thing, because the whole thing is struck.
Well, if you don't care too much about the appearance of the headliner,
I don't.
Sometimes, if you kind of push up on the headliner where it's falling down until you find those bands that I'm talking about, sometimes if you saturate the headliner with like a 3M adhesive and then just kind of hold it up there, you're going to have to brace it usually for 15 or 20 minutes. Sometimes it'll stick.
Mm.
I've seen people... all kinds of different things, you know, where they'll actually poke holes through there and wrap little tie wraps around the bands to the headliners. And
oh, my.
You've seen all kinds of ways of trying to fix that. But
okay.
So, and some of them you can get kind of lucky. I've fixed some of them before. I just don't like doing them because they just so time-consuming. But sometimes if you pull down the molding, this is a four-door car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes if you pull down that rubber strip at the top of the door after you open it there, pull that down, and then you can pull the headliner down and out of the way a little bit. And sometimes you can get your hand in there, and you can accomplish the same thing.
Oh, okay.
In other words, you're just kind of fixing it in spots.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah.
Sometimes that's good enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you talk about 3M adhesive, like just like...
weather strip adhesive.
Two sides of it?
Yeah, it's a weather strip adhesive.
Weather stripping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seems to work pretty good. The other... 3M makes a real good product. It's an aerosol can that really works the best.
Oh, aerosol can.
Yeah.
Okay. Try that. Super. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go on next to line number one, and that would be Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I have two questions on maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
How often would you have to flush and replace your brake fluid after how many miles?
Well, there isn't a straightforward recommendation by every manufacturer, meaning some say 2 years, some say every 4 years.
Okay. So, standard number of miles or so.
No, it's based on time, because what happens to brake fluid, it's hydroscopic, meaning it absorbs moisture.
Right.
And that's why you're changing it. So okay. I would suggest every 4 years.
Okay, fine. And then my next question is this, on a fuel injection system, how often does that have to be cleaned and serviced?
Well, the main thing with a fuel injection system is replace the fuel filter every 15,000 miles.
Yeah.
And then four times a year, we usually suggest that you put in a fuel injector cleaner into the gas tank.
Oh.
The kind you buy.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to buy the high-dollar fuel that has the cleaner in it.
Yeah.
So you just buy the fuel injector cleaner, and you pour it in the gas tank, and then you fill up the tank.
I see. So there's no point in having it especially cleaned by the dealer?
Not unless you're experiencing rough idle situation.
Oh, yeah. Well, I brought my car in for servicing, and they told me it was due for this fuel system service, you know.
Well,
it's kind of an expensive item.
That's correct. It is expensive. And that's why if you'd use the fuel injector cleaner four times a year,
yeah,
you pretty much prevent that. What happens is at the end of the injector, the little pintle valve, it's an inward opening needle valve. There's only like a 4/1000th orifice there. It's very, very small. So it doesn't take a lot to affect the spray pattern of the injector.
Okay. Well, I've never used that cleaner fluid in the gas tank.
Well, why don't you try that?
Yeah. So, but it isn't unreasonable then that after 50,000 miles, which is what I have in my car, they would say, well, you're up for this.
Well, it's kind of a preventative maintenance thing.
Okay.
But as long as it idles okay, you don't have any severe problems with that, I would just use the cleaner.
Okay.
And you have to remember, the cleaner doesn't work instantly. I mean, it's not like you dump it in and you drive around the block and it's fixed. It takes time.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. We'll go next to Colfax, line 4. Hello?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there's any way to check on a supercharger or turbo supercharger, and I don't know the difference, on a used car. You know, what? Perhaps checking what condition it's in currently as you're looking at the car, or how long do they generally last before they have to be replaced? I'm looking at a 97 Mazda Millennia S.
Typically a turbo charger. Are you looking at a car that is owned by one owner, or has it had lots of owners?
I believe it's one owner because it's only got 19,000 miles on it.
Okay. That's good. The problem with turbos, and then I'll get to your answer about how to diagnose them and check them out, is that most people that drive turbocharged cars, unless they've been instructed or they've read their owner's manual, is they get in the car and they start it up and they take off and they put it to the floor. That's the worst thing you can do for a turbo. It needs to get oil temperature so that the oil flows properly to the turbo. Oil, lack of oil lubrication to a turbo is the number one enemy of it. And the other thing, after you've been on the highway for a time being with a turbocharged car, you should let it idle for 30 seconds to a minute before you shut it off. A turbo can spin potentially of upwards of 90,000 RPM, so it's going really, really fast. And we're only talking about an impeller that's maybe 3.5-4 inches in diameter. So those are just kind of general things. Typically when a turbocharger has a problem, A, it doesn't generate boost, and it not always is it the turbocharger. Turbocharger boost is controlled by what they refer to as a wastegate, which limits the maximum amount of boost that can occur. The other thing that will happen when a turbo goes bad is it will blow blue smoke out the back.
Blue smoke?
Which is oil.
Okay.
And that's because the bearings have gone bad, the shaft wobbles, and the seal can't compensate for a big wobble. So those are the main things that I would watch for is, you know, go out on the highway and have somebody follow you. And, you know, just kind of put your arm up or something and let them know that you're going to go all the way to the floor with the gas, and have them pay particular attention to what comes out the tailpipe.
Okay. That blue color?
Right.
Okay.
Typically, a turbocharger will last well over 100,000 miles.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. So, okay. And those are really nice cars. That's a nice car you're looking at.
Seems to be
they're a lot of fun to drive.
Car.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun.
Okie doke.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, thanks. So it sounds like if the kind of driving that you do is short trip in-town driving, you don't want to have, maybe you don't need one, but you probably also don't want to have a turbocharged car.
No, not necessary.
Okay. And on what exactly does a turbocharger do?
It compresses and puts more air into the combustion chamber. It escalates the combustion pressure in there. And, of course, the higher the pressure, it's kind of like the same thing as increasing the compression ratio. It generates more power, more fuel, more power.
So does that have some effect on mileage?
Well, mileage.
Or is it just that it just makes the car
faster,
zippier?
Okay, correct.
Okay,
it makes the mileage go down.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what.
That's
an answer to the
both.
Question. No, you can't.
No,
you can't have high performance and great mileage both.
You can't have them both.
Oh, okay. Rick Karch is our guest from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. We're talking about car care, and if you have a problem, you can give us a call. We have about 10 minutes left, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Caller here in Buda, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Problem I have is I have a 1986 Oldsmobile 98, and it's with the steering. Usually when you start up cold, it's kind of stiff.
Mm-hmm.
You move it a little bit, it
breaks loose.
Mm-hmm. And then sometimes, like if you're just noticing now recently more when it's cold here, like when you finally slow down, like I was pulling into a gas station and maneuvering around the pumps, all of a sudden it'd get hard and then loosen right up again.
This got the 3.8. You've been under the hood, looked under the hood at all?
It's a six-cylinder, yeah.
Right. I think that has a single serpentine belt for the...
Yes, it does.
One belt drives everybody.
Right. Yeah, right. It drives all the air conditioner, alternator, right. Everything.
You may have two problems. The first problem being difficulty to steer when cold has to do with the rack and pinion.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be replaced if you want to solve that problem. The second problem, meaning when you're at the gas pumps and after it's warmed up, when you turn the wheels, it's easy, hard.
No, it's hard. It's only when you really want to turn it quick. If you're turning it easy, it's not a problem. It's only when you're, make a quick turn.
Okay. And you don't hear any, belt squeal or anything that?
No, I don't.
Well, I don't know if replacing the rack is going to solve both problems. It may very well solve both problems, though. You might look at the color of the fluid. The fluid is probably brown.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to being bright red.
Okay.
And
how expensive is the rack changing that out?
I don't remember off the top of my head. You just have to call around.
Okay.
And, since you know what you need, I would look at that serpentine belt really close, though, and make sure it doesn't have a lot of cracks in it.
Okay.
Like maybe it's slipping or something.
Mm-hmm.
Does it do this worse when it rains or after you hit a puddle?
No, I hadn't noticed that.
Okay. All right.
No, it's mostly, it's really, really right when you first start up, and very seldom, but once in a while I notice now, after I've been driving, if you're trying to make a real sharp, quick turn.
Right.
Sometimes it'll do it.
Well, why don't you take a look at the color of the fluid.
Okay.
And if it's brown or if it smells burnt
mm-hmm.
to you, then in conjunction with the rack replacement, they should flush the system out as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. To Champaign next, line three. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning. I have a problem with a Honda Accord 94. It has 85,000 miles on it. This car has developed, and this has been going on for many months, probably at least eight. It develops a hum after the car has been turned off in warm weather. It's a very low hum, and it's intermittent. And it finally stops on its own. When I took the car in, first they thought it might be the ABS brakes. It wasn't that. Then they said they thought maybe it was just the fan I was hearing when you're idling, and I know it's not that because I've heard that before. I was wondering if this could have something to do with the fuel pump, because it sounds like it's coming from the back of the car. Do you have any ideas?
Next time you hear it,
mm-hmm.
is this like after you go home and pull in the garage? Where
right,
you know,
and the hum is so low
right.
that I only hear it in my garage. If I'm parked outside, you
mm-hmm.
can hear it.
Okay. I would do one or two things just to settle my mind. I mean, I realize you already told me that you know what the cooling fan sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I would, when you hear it, open the hood and look in there and make sure that the fan's not turning, which is on the back side of the radiator.
Okay.
Okay.
I have opened the hood to listen.
Okay.
Not heard anything from the front.
Okay.
But I haven't looked.
All right. Well, just to make me feel better, okay?
okay.
Do that first.
Okay.
And then after you do that, and if in fact the fan is not turning, uh-huh. then go around to the back of the car,
mm-hmm.
and if you're standing by the left rear tire,
mm-hmm.
just reach under there with your foot or a piece of 2x4 or something and hit the bottom of the gas tank.
Okay.
And see if that makes it quit. It probably will not.
Okay.
And then the next thing we would do is you'd up under the on the dash on the driver's side is where the main fuel pump relay is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the palm of your hand and just hit the bottom of the dash,
okay.
and see if that makes it stop.
Okay.
And that's probably going to make it stop because it's what you're describing to me sounds like a fuel pump that's still running. And sometimes the relay will stick closed.
Oh, okay.
And it may have something to do with temperature. It may have something to do with time. It may be one of them things that, you know, you could take it in 50 times and it would never do it for anybody except for you just because of the whatever it takes to duplicate it. But probably, I guess, I would look under the hood first, and then I would hit the dash second.
Okay. Now, they dropped the tank in this car about 6 months ago to replace a bad fuel sensor as far as the gauge was not working.
Yes. Okay.
Could that be related at all?
No.
Okay. Okay. If my concern is I'm going to be taking a long trip in a week.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a possible problem with a breakdown or a fuel pump going out at all if I can't solve the problem?
No, I don't think the fuel pump's going to go out. The reason I say that, the fuel pump only works when it gets power in a ground.
Okay.
In other words, once it loses a ground or once it loses power, it's going to quit running. So okay. I'm more inclined to lean toward the relay sticking.
Okay.
Sometimes we have trouble with them where you go to start the car, and sometimes it just cranks and cranks and cranks and won't start. And you
uh-huh.
try that a few more times, and then finally it starts. And maybe it does it once a week. Maybe it does it once a month. And that's typically related to that same relay.
Same thing?
Yes.
I was going to say, the car operates just fine otherwise.
Yes.
And there's no problem with it.
Right.
I was thinking about having the fuel filter replaced,
mm-hmm.
But that's not really related, right?
No, but that's good. Preventative maintenance if you haven't done that. I mean, you're at 85,000. You're actually, it should have been done at 60.
It might have been. I don't know. I've had it serviced like it's supposed to
right.
be. And he had told me that the next time, well, it probably was because he said that the fuel filter is not supposed to be replaced until it's 120,000 miles. So I'm assuming they're
yeah.
recommending every 60.
Well, see, every manufacturer has their own recommendations. But your next major service will be at 90,000.
Actually, they've already done that.
Okay. Did they do the timing belt?
Pardon?
Was the timing belt replaced?
The timing belt was actually replaced at 60,000 because I had to replace a water
pump. Yeah. Okay.
So.
Well, you're doing good. You're doing everything right.
So my car is not going to die on me if we still can't figure it out after trying all these various things.
Well, try those two things.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. We'll get at least one more here. We'll go to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My car just started doing this. I got in earlier and it was fine, but when I tried to get in the next time, well, it's a 97 Venture, and I use my keyless entry to open the door, and if you do double-click, it'll open up the whole car. when I did that, it opened and then it locked up real quick. But then I just one click and got in the front and got in, and as I was driving, I could hear the lock mechanism
going up and down.
Going on. Mm-hmm. No, it was only wanting to lock.
Just your door?
All doors.
Okay. The driver's door has the main control switch in it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when you push that key the second time, that unlocks all the other doors.
Mm-hmm.
There's a possibility that switch in there is either dirty or needs to be replaced, or maybe it just needs to be lubricated.
You don't think it's electrical or the computer panel? Or?
Not usually, because the panel, meaning the control unit that receives a signal from the remote, either it works or it doesn't work usually.
I
mean, I have seen them do this, but I think the first place to look is the actual driver's door. Remove the door panel.
Well, I also noticed when I hit the button inside the car,
yes,
on the driver's side, it would unlock, but it wouldn't lock it. And then I tried the passenger side, and the same thing.
Okay. Well, that's again, the door panel's going to have to come off so that you can check how the switch is functioning, make sure the switch works properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you've got a lock-unlock switch that maybe has a contact problem in it or something.
Uh-huh.
Maybe if you push on it a little harder, maybe it'll work, or wiggle it maybe a little bit. I mean, there's things like that you can try, but it's something that you're going to have to take in and have somebody take a look at.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there for this time around, with the promise that in a couple months, I'm sure Rick will come back and we will do it again.
Sure.
Thanks very much. We appreciate it. Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign.